This is Radio Superior 1945, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1945. This is a true story of our past. Step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the Great Lakes station, KUWS. Jack McKenna reminding you to, well, heck, I've been reminding people to do different things for the war effort for more than 3 years now. But today is Victory in Europe Day. How about that, folks? It's VE Day. Ah, it's 6 o'clock Central Standard Wartime, Tuesday, May 8th, 1945. Lou Martin is in with the 6 o'clock news, and we've got an hour special VE Extra for you today. Most of the gang will be in.
I thought it was going to be just Ray and Harriet. We didn't schedule anybody else.
Don't forget Colonel Raffaele.
Who can forget him, even though he can never remember our names? Ah!
And figure in a couple of mystery guests, people who walk in off the street because they have something they need to save. So how many is that?
Another half dozen or so.
But who's counting? This VE Day 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Bingham Hardware, with a gallon of Sherwin-Williams house paint for just $3.45. America's favorite house paint at Bingham Hardware, 1009 Tower Avenue in Superior. Good evening, Lou.
President Truman and Prime Minister Churchill proclaimed VE Day today while reminding the United Nations that Japan remains unsubdued. News of Germany's unconditional surrender yesterday brought throngs of Times Square people to New York City, stretching down 7th and Broadway. In Superior, businesses, taverns, and schools closed for the day. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson reports.
While President Truman declared Sunday as a day of prayer, many churches in Superior will hold services tonight. The long list of men killed and wounded in the European theater makes it a comfort to have a place to go tonight, according to Hammond Avenue Presbyterian Reverend George Senti. The Retail Merchants Association and the Grocers Association agreed to close up for the day, but essential war industries like the Globe and Walter Butler Shipyards in Riverside, Duluth, and Superior are all busy building more ships for the war against Japan. In fact, three Globe Shipyard workers are also pastors, and they led their fellow workers in scripture and prayer today. Sheet metal worker Reverend Thomas Rutgers read from the 7th chapter of Revelations. They gathered in the punch shop of Globe because of today's bad weather. Together, the workers also listened to President Truman's VE Day declaration. Reverend Fred Aspen of the Pipe Department read from Psalms, and Reverend Abraham Esau, also of the Pipe Department, shared passages from Proverbs. Then workers got back to building ships. City Hall, courthouse, and post offices were all open. Superior State Teachers College let classes out at noon today. Lou?
Well, thanks, Mike. President Truman is calling all people to prayer today. In his morning radio broadcast, he remembered his predecessor, President Roosevelt.
This is a solemn but a glorious hour. I only wish that Franklin D. Roosevelt had lived to witness this day. General Eisenhower informs me that the forces of Germany have surrendered to the United Nations. The flags of freedom fly all over Europe. We must work to finish the war. Our victory is but half won. The West is free, but the East is still in bondage to the treacherous tyranny of the Japanese. When the last Japanese division has surrendered unconditionally, then only will our fighting job be done.
We also have these words from British Prime Minister Winston Churchill, taken from a BBC broadcast monitored by American radio from London.
We from this island and from our United Empire maintained the struggle single-handed for a whole year, until we were joined by the military might of Soviet Russia and later by the overwhelming power and resources of the United States of America. Finally, almost the whole world was combined against the evildoers who are now prostrate before us. Japan, with all her treachery and greed, remains unsubdued. the injuries she has inflicted upon Great Britain, the United States, and other countries, and her detestable cruelties, call for justice and retribution. We must now devote all our strength and resources to the completion of our tasks, both at home and abroad. Advance, Britannia! Long live the cause of freedom! God save the king!
Now we go to Washington for our World News Roundup.
This is the nation's capital. Lyle C. Wilson here. President Harry Truman proclaimed today complete and final victory in Europe in the greatest war in history. He went on a nationwide radio hookup at 9 o'clock Eastern wartime this morning to read his formal proclamation. But first, he prefaced his remarks with this warning, quoting him, "Our victory is but half won. The West is free, but the East is still in bondage to the treacherous tyranny of Japan. When the last Japanese division has surrendered unconditionally, then only will our fighting be done," unquote. It was President Truman's 61st birthday, his first in the White House, and he described it as a solemn but glorious hour. In his proclamation, he declared Sunday, Mother's Day, as a day of prayer for offering joyful thanks to God for the victory we have won, and pray that he will support us to the end of our struggle and guide us into the way of peace. While rejoicing in our victory, Mr. Truman asked the nation not to forget that sorrow and heartache abide in thousands of American homes. Quoting him again, "This is a solemn but glorious hour. This has brought to a close the titanic struggle which has cost the lives of 132,000 Americans and more than 550,000 casualties in more than 3 years of fighting against the Axis in the European and Mediterranean theaters." While President Truman made it clear that our struggle will not end until Japan is defeated, he did say that unconditional surrender does not mean enslavement or extermination of the Japanese people. Drawing attention to the effort in San Francisco to bring about an international peace organization, the president said, "It must be a peace rooted in justice and law." Finally, for the first time in the war years, spotlights will be turned on for one night only on the Washington Monument, the Capitol Dome, and other beloved national shrines. In Washington, this is Lyle C. Wilson, calling Europe. Come in, London.
This is London calling, Webb Miller reporting. Proclaiming victory in Europe, Prime Minister Winston Churchill said today the unconditional surrender of Germany will be ratified and confirmed in Berlin. The Prime Minister also declared that hostilities will officially end at 1 minute after midnight tonight, British time. He said the Germans are still resisting the Russian in places, but added if fighting continues after midnight, they will deprive themselves of the protection of the laws of war as they will be attacked from all quarters by the Allies. But he added immediately that as a result of information received from General Eisenhower, it should not prevent us from celebrating today and tomorrow victory in Europe. Quoting him, "The German war is therefore at an end." He reminded Britain that we may allow ourselves a brief period of rejoicing, but let us not forget for a moment the toll and the efforts that lie ahead. Quoting Mr. Churchill again, "Advance, Britannia! Long live the cause of freedom! God save the king!" Unquote. In London, this is Webb Miller calling Germany. Come in, Jack Fleischer.
This is Berchtesgaden. Jack Fleischer, United Press. We're at Hitler's eagle's nest, and the Führer would chew his carpets if he could see his Holy of Holies today. French engineers and American airborne troops already have made the tough climb to the eagle's nest atop the mountain peak on Hitler's Berghof estate here. They've begun to dig into the secrets hidden there, including the mystery of the barred door. An engineer from the famous French 2nd Armored Division, Yves Regnier, spent last night at the retreat. He found, among other things, two locked steel doors. Without any dynamite, what lies behind those doors will remain a mystery for now. The doors are sealed with cement and are in the basement of the eagle's nest. Regnier says the place has three floors, with one having a sunken garden effect. He says the eagle's nest is also packed with food, superb French wine, champagne, and cognac. The beautiful rugs, furniture, tapestries, and paintings are intact. The approach to the eagle's nest is a winding road, twisting up the snow-covered mountainside. I'm writing this 6,000 feet above sea level, and I'm still 4 or 5 miles from the eagle's nest itself. The road ahead of us is blocked by 10 to 12 feet of snow. Corporal Anthony Mayo of Waterloo, New York, worked all night with his bulldozer trying to clear a path. Right now, he's stretched out on top of his bulldozer, ready to go back to work once he finishes his little nap. Then we'll get back to the job of trying to find out what's behind the steel doors. In Berchtesgaden, this is Jack Fleischer, calling Pacific Headquarters. Come in, Guam.
This is Pacific Headquarters, Jack Tremaine here. Allied fighting forces in the Pacific pressed unremitting warfare against the Japanese today, with no time for celebrating the end of the war in Europe. Military authorities predict that even with reinforcements from the European theater, it would require another year to beat the Japanese. They do concede, however, that the Nipponese Empire may surrender before that point. The war brings new Allied blows in the Okinawa, Philippines, and Tarakan campaigns. B-29s continued bombing mainland Japan on Kyushu Island's suicide plane bases. Marines lead a general advance on the southern end of Okinawa to drive within a mile of the capital of Naha. Troops of the 77th Division drove to the island's second largest city, while the 7th Division made small gains near the east coast. Australian and Dutch troops are poised for a drive into the rich oil fields on Tarakan off the east coast of Borneo. Other American troops advanced within half a mile of Bailit Pass in northern Luzon. The remaining Japanese forces in the Philippines are in the Cayagan Valley near there. At Pacific Headquarters in Guam, this is Frank Tremaine.
This flash just in from Moscow. Official Soviet news agency TASS correspondent Anatoly Filgun is reporting that Hitler's body has been found. A Russian general stated that the body of a man identified as Adolf Hitler has been found in the ruins of Berlin. General George S. Patton's Third Army inflicted 530,000 casualties on the Germans since it went into action last August in Europe. That includes 145,000 Germans killed. Patton's army, the biggest in the world, comprises 18 divisions and four army corps, totaling 500,000 men. The brownout is over. The War Production Board revoked its orders against unnecessary lighting after President Truman declared the war in Europe was over. It was the first lifting of so-called morale curbs imposed on civilian activity during last winter's military setbacks. This in from Battle Creek, Michigan. German POWs from the famed Afrika Corps are helping celebrate the VE Day. They were ordered to sweep ticker tape and confetti from Battle Creek's streets after demonstrations this morning. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:09. Jack McKenna has this message from our sponsor.
And our sponsor, Lou, is Bingham Hardware, 1009 Tower Avenue in Superior. And the news is great. And we don't have to take a lot of time to tell you folks about this baby. Sherwin-Williams Paints, the finest in America. It washes in a jiffy. It's a semi-luster wall finish, and it's great for just $3.75 a gallon. Now, if you prefer the other Sherwin-Williams paint, it's a free color styling service, $3.45 a can of that paint. America's favorite house paint, I might add. Yes, sirree, folks. Sherwin-Williams, get down there and get that paint and improve your house. Also, improve your yard with a trellis or pergola. Painted new white. Large selection of sizes and designs. 89 cents and up. How about that? Sherwin-Williams, Bingham Hardware, 1009 Tower Avenue in Superior.
The end of the war in Europe will surely reduce our daily casualties from Upper Wisconsin. But for now, the list continues to grow. The Office of War Information today includes the death of a Brühl man. Second Lieutenant Frederick Jacob was killed in action in Europe. He's the husband of Mrs. Ruth Jacob of Brühl. Private George Hammond of Foxborough is listed among the wounded in action. His wife, Pearl Hammond, is in Foxborough. Also wounded in Europe was Tech Sergeant Orrin Smith of Superior. His wife, June Smith, lives on Susquehanna Avenue. Wounded in action in the Pacific are PFC Arthur Gouget, brother of Mrs. Stanley Katzmark of Superior, PFC Benjamin Smith of Solon Springs, PFC Arthur Tast, son of Mrs. Anna Tast of 17th Avenue in Ashland. Mrs. Violet Ostrowski of Foxborough has been notified that her brother was killed in action. Marine Corps Private Raymond Matsky was killed while fighting on Iwo Jima. Private Matsky was one of seven sons of Adam Matsky of Foxborough. He entered the service in July 1944, was shipped overseas in December. Surviving beside his sister and father are seven brothers, Corporal Charles, somewhere in the Philippines, PFC Benjamin and John and Sergeant Joseph in Germany, PFC Edward in Camp Livingston, Louisiana, Merchant Marine Theodore, now on a voyage, and Stanley in Minneapolis. A telegram from the War Department to Mr. and Mrs. William Terry of East 6th Street in Superior said that their son was killed in the Pacific. Navy aviation radio man Donald Terry was killed when his plane crashed in the South Pacific May the 2nd. He was 19 years old. The War Department notified Elmer Warbelow of Iron River that his son Corporal Vilas Warbelow was wounded in Germany March the 17th. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson reports on the death of a lieutenant from Mellon in Ashland County.
Good evening once again, Lou. The commanding officer of 1st Lieutenant John Nelson of the 497th Bombardment Squadron wrote his parents, Mr. and Mrs. Edward Nelson of Mellon, a letter about their son, and I'd like to read it to you now. No doubt by now you've received word from the War Department that your son, 1st Lieutenant John P. Nelson, was killed in action February 14, 1945. John was flying as pilot on a combat mission against a heavily defended and vital area in Germany when his aircraft was hit by an intense and heavy barrage of flak. As it left formation, it was seen going down in a spin. Due to a heavy cloud coverage, it was not possible to see if any of the crew was able to parachute to safety. John's body was located in a cemetery in Germany, where it had been buried by the Germans soon after the crash. It was removed from the German cemetery and reburied in an American military cemetery in Hamm, Luxembourg. Your son's personal effects have been cared for and will be shipped to you by the Army Quartermaster Corps. John had completed 28 combat missions and had been awarded the Air Medal and four bronze oak leaf clusters to the Air Medal. Your son was a most valued member of my command. His friends, among our officers and enlisted men, will long remember his personal presence and his untiring effort in the execution of his duties. His loss is keenly felt by the squadron, and I join the squadron in expressing deep regret. Sincerely yours, Daniel C. Bronner, Lieutenant Colonel, Air Corps Commanding. Lou?
Thanks, Mike. Fort Sheridan, Illinois Commander George Cushman has issued 60-day furloughs to 350 former German prisoners of war, including three area men. Private Clyde Mooney of Superior, PFC Donald Mastell of Solon Springs, and Private Thorwald Osnes of West Ashland are heading home. Finally, in this long list today, we have news of a reunion for an Ashland man. Sergeant Henry Kegel returned to the arms of his parents, Mr. and Mrs. Chris Kegel, the family home at 705 Prentice Avenue. Sergeant Kegel was a German prisoner of war. He's also the first Ashland POW to return home. He was liberated last month, Jack.
My bet is the sergeant is catching up on his mashed potatoes and gravy and apple pie, courtesy of Mama Kegel.
I think you'd win that bet.
Lou Martin, folks, newsman extraordinaire. You know, besides the Kegel kitchen, the place to be these days sounds like Berchtesgaden. My guess is a couple of bottles of that cognac is already missing from der Führer's Liegerkabinett. It'd go perfect with pickled eggs.
Pickled eggs and cognac?
How about pickled turkey gizzards, then?
Can you think of anything else horrible to pickle to ruin a good cognac?
Well, pickled pig's feet? Okay, I'll stop now. Your face is looking a little pickled. Let's check the forecast for this VE day, friends. May 8th, 1945. Fair and continued cold tonight and tomorrow, with a low tonight of just 25 degrees. And tomorrow's high at 54. Yeah,
blame it on that darn wind off Lake Superior. Hey, it's music time, and we're going to have music for all you gals waiting for your soldier to come on home. Let's start with this one from Tommy Dorsey and singing by Frank Sinatra. This is I'll Be Seeing You, not bad, huh? On the Martin and McKenna VE Day Show. Tommy Dorsey, old Mr. T.D., with Frank Sinatra, and I'll be seeing you on station KUWS. You know, Lou, I feel like celebrating, but it sounds like I'd get in trouble if I did.
Since when did consequences and conscience bother you? I'm just kidding. Maybe we'll figure out some way to celebrate. I'll see if Harriet can bring some cookies.
And ice cream. Oh, boy. Friends, we have these messages for you on this V.E. Day. Clemens Real Estate and Insurance Agency says tomorrow there's peace in Europe, but buy bonds and push up production to hasten the victory over the Japs. First National Bank of Superior says Liberty wins again, and on to Tokyo. Support the 7th War Loan Drive and buy bonds. Duplex Manufacturing Company says when victory is complete, we'll celebrate. Till then, let's stay on the job. And Northern Engineering Company on 100 Ogden Avenue says, well, we've done it, and we're mighty happy about it, but we realize that we're not finished. Will you help us clean up the Japs starting right now? All important messages, friends. Let's continue our theme for the soon-to-be reunion. We hope this one from Benny Goodman and the vocals of Milton Michael Tilton. And we'll meet again on the Martin and McKenna VE Day Show. Benny Goodman, OBG, with Lilton Martha Tilton, and we'll meet again on station KUWS.
We have two guests I'd like to introduce. First, Superior City Manager F. Robert Buechner, VE Day Committee Chairman.
He's all right.
And Douglas County Draft Board Chairman Joe Raffaele.
Mr. Killjoy himself.
That's Chairman Colonel. I can be both, you know. And McCorkle, I'm here to make sure that there's no improper celebrations and inappropriate fun going on.
Shucks, I figured that's what you're always here for.
Good evening, Colonel. I've never had the pleasure.
Even after you meet him, you won't.
Good to meet you there, Bleacher.
That's Buechner.
Kind of name is Bleacher, anyway. Is that German?
Buechner is a bit of Kaiser in Mia.
Well, I suppose you've been an American for a while. I mean, being the city manager and all.
Yes, I can vote at everything.
All this is interesting, but, Mr. Buechner?
Hey, how do you spell bean eater anyhow?
B-E-U-C-H-N-E-R. Buechner, not near. Do you have a problem with that?
Go get him.
There'll be no fighting on VE Day.
I didn't mean to get personal, so what's this F. Robert stuff? What's your first name and why don't you use it?
All right, pal. Better button it or else.
I've dreamt of this day. Somebody putting the old colonel in this place.
Gentlemen, it's VE Day. You know, both of you say it should be solemn and respectful.
And it has been just that, till now, anyway.
Yeah, you're right, McMartin. Sorry about that, Betterman.
The colonel struggles with names.
We're used to it. I'm McCorkle, he's McMartin.
I guess I'm okay with Beckman, but, Lou, you're right. Superior has captured the spirit that the committee encouraged for VE Day. Churches are open, schools and stores are closed, and people at essential war jobs continue to work. Throughout it all, people have been solemn.
Or in Raffi's case, sullen.
Hey.
We've had some solemn observances rather than noisy celebrating. As the VE committee chairman, I'm gratified that our city has handled the situation in such a rational and patriotic manner.
Ditto for me, too, pal. You said it, buddy.
But places like New York and London had big celebrations.
Well, you can't blame the Londoners after all they've been through. In New York, there was open kissing and hugging. It was rather excessive.
Open kissing and hugging and any other show of affection should be against the law.
Unless she's a cute nurse.
Stop with your fixation on nurses already.
I'd like to take this opportunity to express my thanks to the committee, the Evening Telegram, the radio stations, and various religions, industrial, patriotic, and civic groups that have brought this about.
Thank you, Mr. F. Robert Buechner, City Manager and VE Day Committee Chairman.
I have to say, Lou, your reputation for weird interviews is intact.
Well, maybe if we had fewer microphones and a lock on our door.
A lock on your door?
I'm sticking around to make sure there's no levitation going on here today.
Once they're inside, it's too late.
I see.
On with the music, friends. Hopefully without too much levitation.
I think he means levity.
Here's the Andrew Sisters and Apple Blossom Time on the Martin and McKenna VE Day Show.
Child, you will be us some time.
Then what will you do?
Then I'll be with you to change your name to mine.
When will that be?
One day, maybe in May.
Then what will you do?
I'll come and say to you, dear, happy the bride that the sun shines on today.
Then what a wonderful wedding there will be one day in May. What a very, very wonderful day for you and me, dear. Church bells will chime. You will be mine. When? In apple blossom time.
The Andrews sisters in apple blossom time, which is, right about now, isn't it? Where's the colonel?
Ostensibly, he's going to get coffee, but I think that song choked him up, and he's looking for a hanky.
And he says, real men don't cry.
This is a good time to look back on some of the many turning points of the war in Europe. Of course, the Battle of Britain and Hitler's inability to break the spirit of the British people is the first turning point. Then in December of 1941, the Nazis are stopped outside of the gates of Moscow. In 1942, the crucial battle for North Africa was at El Alamein. In October of 1942, British General Sir Bernard Montgomery began his offensive. That offensive was in conjunction with secret plans to invade North Africa near Casablanca and Oran. A joint U.S.-British operation using 850 ships led by little-known General Dwight D. Eisenhower and Lieutenant General Mark Clark. With this offensive and the landings, the Allies would put the crafty German General Erwin Rommel in a giant pincer. In just 4 days, both Casablanca and Oran surrendered, and the end was near for Rommel. Over the next few months, there were setbacks, and Yank troops learned how to fight in the desert sands against the Desert Fox. Rommel retreated to the Mereth Line, the southern wall of their Tunisian coffin corner. On May the 12th, 1943, the last scrap of Nazi resistance ended in North Africa. And from there on, it was on to Sicily and then Italy.
Boy, that seems like a long time ago. There were some good times, of course. Never forget the Dione Quintuplets launching 5 ships at Butler Shipyards on May 9th of that year.
I'd like to forget about our broadcast platform collapsing that day.
How about 1939, just before the war? That's when we had the World's Fair in New York and San Francisco.
The featured futuristic invention was radio television.
I remember the 20 New York Fair midgets who went to the German consulate to sign up for military service.
You do remember the strangest stuff.
Here's one for all the doughboys and flyboys that we hope will soon be coming back home from Europe. Vaughn Monroe sings When the Lights Go On Again.
When the lights let's go on again. All over the world. And the ships will sail again. All over the world. Then we'll have time for things like wedding rings, and free hearts will sing when the lights go on again.
Folks, when the lights go on again, how appropriate. On station KUWS, it's VE Day, folks, and we're going to have ice cream.
Hope the draft board chairman doesn't think that that's too much celebration. Let me introduce Joe Wardman of Superior, who remembered well the celebration on the home front of World War I.
Celebration? Let me tell you, you ain't seen nothing the likes of whooping it up the morning the big war ended in 18. Now, you listen to me. I was just 45 years old then. Lots of vim and vinegar. Look at the wrong and I'd spit in your eye. I didn't take nothing from nobody no how. Why, they'd get off the sidewalk if they saw old Joe Waterman coming down. Yeah, when he came down that sidewalk, you better look out. And they'd better scatter, too. Because, you know...
Oh, just fine. But what about the local celebration that ended the war?
Well, I was getting there. You young people. Now, I'm very disrespectful. You got your impatient ways.
Blue's always been that way, Mr. Wardman, sir.
Thanks for once again watching my back. Mr. Wardman, your recollection of November the 11th, 1918.
Oh, I remember... Like it was 26 years ago.
It was 26 years ago.
Well, it was a different time.
Yes, it was 26 years ago.
No, sonny, no. I mean, there was the war, sure. But the Cloak Cave Fire, that was a bad one. It was fresh in our minds. I remember the talk of rebuilding Cloak Cave. And the Spanish flu. You might not remember that schools were closed and no public gatherings were allowed. Many people were sick and dying that year. But I recall the day after the war ended, in 12 November 1918, they lifted the flu ban and schools reopened. It was a different time.
And a big celebration. Can you tell us about that?
Well, what do you think I'm here for, pal? Pushy, sneak.
Pushy and impatient.
You know, what comes around goes around.
Well, I recall the headline in the Telegram Extra. Superior goes wild. And boy, did we. We all got up to go to work as usual when the Telegram Extra hit the streets and declared the end of the war. We got the day off, a holiday for everyone. Not a thing was open, excepting those poor saps working at the paper.
A reporter's job is never done.
Well, me and the fellas were parading up and down Tower Avenue. We burned the Kaiser in effigy. Twice. Once under the old Grand Army of the Republic arch at Broadway and Tower, and later in the day at old Hammond Park. I think that Martin fella, he used to live over that way. It was a celebration Superior had never seen before or since. 5 o'clock in the morning, whistles and sirens blew to wake up the city. By 5:30, we were on Tower Avenue stomping and whooping it up. But there was something missing, but I figured it out. So I grabs Hank Mankey, and the two of us went into the New Canton Cafe, and we grabbed a flag.
You got an American flag in a place called New Canton Cafe?
Ironical, ain't it? Well, folks saw the stars and the stripes, and they fell in line behind me and Hank. Pretty soon the boys were blowing their horns, banging on their drums, and before you knew it, there was a band marching with us. Cars and trucks joined the parade, and thousands of throats were yelling and carrying on. And Mayor Fred Baxter, well, the old windbag, was out front of the Hotel Superior, speech-making like usual. I can see him now, proclaiming it a holiday. Things were still tight. Food controls were on for a while after. But President Wilson canceled the draft call.
Thank you, Mr. Joe Wardman of Superior.
How come you burned the Kaiser in effigy twice?
Well, the first time it was at 5:30 in the morning. The second was at 8:30 at night. You know, it was November, so we needed something to warm us up. We roasted marshmallows.
Makes sense. Let's hear from Elton Britt, and there's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere on the Martin and McKenna VE Day show.
There's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere in a distant land so many miles away. Only Uncle Sam's great heroes get to go there, where I wish that I could also live someday. I'd see Lincoln, Custer, Washington, and Perry, Nathan Hale and Colin Kelly too. There's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere, waving o'er the land of heroes brave and true. In this war with its mad schemes of destruction, of our country fair and our sweet liberty, by the mad dictators, leaders of corruption, can't the U.S. use a mountain boy like me? God gave me the right to be a free American. For that precious right I'd gladly die. There's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere. That is where I want to live when I die. Though I realize I'm crippled, that is true, sir. Please don't judge my courage by my twisted leg. Let me show my Uncle Sam what I can do, sir. Let me help to bring the axes down a peg. If I do some great deed, I will be a hero. And a hero brave is what I want to be. There's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere. In that heaven there should be a place for me.
Elton Britt, and there's a star-spangled banner waving somewhere on station KUWS.
Boy, oh boy, McMartin, you sure were rude to that old-timer.
I was not rude. I was just trying to keep him on the topic.
Yeah, they're pushy, 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 if you ask me.
He's been that way this week. Kind of tense.
Yeah, needs to relax. A little honey. Now, that's the best way to catch a bumblebee.
I think it's a little sugar is a good way to get some honey.
First of all, it's to catch a fly, you need a little honey. Or you catch more flies with a little honey. Second of all, I don't need the colonel of all people lecturing me about being pushy.
Touchy, touchy. Say, I got this thing out of the paper. It says it wasn't all blood and thunder during the war. In 1940, women lifeguards beautify beaches for the first time. The quiz kids rise to fame. In 1941, George Hopkins parachutes on the top of Devil's Tower on a $50 bet. But he can't get down to get paid. Mickey Mouse films come to the aid of mental patients. Joan Blondell is the world's most glamorous mother. And Orson Welles makes his first film.
McCorkle, who cares about Jane Blondie and Mickey Mouse?
You'd care about Joan Blondell if you saw her in the movies.
I only watch war movies. All right, listen up. I've been told by my buddies over in Iron River that they're going to have a sing-along in the Iron River gym tonight. But nothing but Patriot... Nothing. I can't even... There's some Patriots involved and some songs. Okay. With nothing but patriotic songs. Now, the Iron River town chairman, McCrab, says everyone's been going to church there today and to observe VEJ. Good people, those Iron Riverians.
Iron Riverians?
Sounds like a club. Let's hear.
Now, just wait a cotton picking minute. Now play something patriotic, you know, good war song.
I've got just the thing. Soldiers everywhere like this one. Here's Perry Como.
Now, what kind of name is Perry Como? Sounds made up. Phony.
And Lily Marlene on the Martin and McKenna VE Day Show.
Hey. That's a Kraut song.
Would you like to hear the story of a girl that many soldiers know? It's a tale of love in all its glory. They tell when the lights are soft and low. Underneath the lamppost by the barricade, standing all alone, every night you'll see her wait. She waits for a boy who marched away, and though he's gone, she hears him say, "Oh, promise you'll be true, fare thee well, Lily Marlene, till I return to you. Fare thee well, Lily Marlene."
This is the story of Lily Marlene.
With a kiss she gave her promise to be constant as the stars above. Every soldier knows she's kept her promise, and she has been faithful to her love.
Underneath the lamppost by the barricade, standing all alone, every night you see her wait. For this is the place her vow was made, and breezes sing her serenade.
Oh, promise you'll be true, fare thee well, Lily Marlene, till I return to you. Fare thee well, Lily Marlene.
This is the story of Lily Marlene. Though each tale must have an ending, no one knows just what the end will be. But tonight when twilight is descending, if you'll come along, here's what you'll see.
Underneath the lamppost by the barricade,
standing all alone, every night you'll see her wait.
And as they go marching to the fray,
the soldiers all salute and say, "We'll tell him you've been true.
Fare thee well, Lily Marlene,
till he returns to you.
Fare thee well, Lily Marlene."
Perry Como and Lily Marlene on station KUWS. Where's the colonel?
I think that song choked him up, too.
He's right about it being a German song, but soldiers from many languages sing it. I've got some more news from the war years stateside. In 1942, juvenile delinquency increases. Mississippi has 3 lynchings in 1 week, and everyone is singing "Praise the Lord" and "Pass the Ammunition." In 1943, the big song is "Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree." In 1944, the play "Oklahoma" and Frank Sinatra both make it big. a 30% luxury tax is slapped on nightclubs, and everybody is singing Mersey Dotes. Now, without any unnecessary celebrating, the man of the sporting news, the goodest sport of them all.
The goodest?
Rapid repulsion. Hiya, Ray.
Hiya, Jake.
What a day, huh?
It still hasn't sunk in yet. No war with Germany anymore.
V.E. Day. But not with a lot of whooping it up, I understand. I see the colonel is making sure of it. Harriet brought some cake and ice cream.
All right, Harriet.
Trouble is, the colonel is taking off some of the frosting from the cake. He says it's excessive.
Man alive, that's pretty obsessive.
An excessive obsessive.
Well, there's more. He's taking out the chocolate chips from the chocolate chip ice cream. He says the vanilla is acceptable.
An excessive obsessive who says what's respectively acceptable.
Now that's enough.
Hey, fans of the sporting world, VE Day means baseball will play its World Series this fall. With the influx of GIs, we might even see the return of the All-Star game. Major League Baseball has 500 men in the service, many overseas, many in the Pacific Theater. And the military brass says it could take a year for some of the boys to get home from Europe by the time everything is sorted out. After 3 weeks of the 1945 season, both circuits seem to be in a delicate balance, so much so that one returning star could make the difference between a pennant and a cellar dweller. Other questions. Will Uncle Sam let horse racing resume? Will football be better this fall, especially college, since many programs are shut down for lack of men? Former White Sox pitcher John Rigney sends word from the Marianas in the Pacific that ex-Tiger Johnny Lippon is missing a lot of games there. He's not injured, but Lippon is busy flying casualties from Okinawa in his B-29. Rigney says riding a B-29 is a lot like riding the Chicago L train, except the B-29 isn't as jerky, and it doesn't cost a dime. And we just heard from former Green Bay Packer back captain Hal Van Every. He's been in a German POW camp. He heard the Packers won the Western Division last year, but he says he's out of shape and lost a lot of weight. Hey, fans, how about we send Captain Van Every some good bratwursts and cheese when he gets home? That'll fatten him up. This is Rapid Ray Paulson reminding you that everyone loves a good sport. Jake?
I don't think it's very sporting for the colonel to take some of the frosting off the cake or the chocolate chips out of the ice cream.
What was it you said?
An excessive obsessive who says what's respectively acceptable.
Now say that three times fast.
Never. Let's enjoy the music of Dick Hames and Helen Forrest and together for you gals hoping to see their guys come home again soon on the Martin and McKenna V.E. Day Show.
We stroll the lane together, laughed at the rain together, sang love's refrain together, and we'd both pretend it would never end. One day we cried together, cast love aside together. You're gone from me, but in my memory, we always will be together.
We stroll the lane together, laughed at the rain together, sang love's refrain together, and we'd both pretend it would never end. Through storm and song together, our hearts as one together. You're gone from me, but in my memory, we always will be together.
Dick Hames and Helen Forrest together singing Together on station KUWS.
Let me introduce community editor Harriet Feurig.
Where's the cake? The ice cream?
Oh, that Colonel Raffle is the limit! I bring nice things so we can have a nice little party, and he's ruining everything! I used my last sugar rations to make icing for the cake, and what does he do? He said the frosting was too thick, and he took half of it off!
That's it. I'm going in there, and we'll settle this like men.
A frosting fight is settling it like men?
Go ahead, Harriet. Don't you worry.
Lou's my hero.
Oh, don't do anything rash, Louis.
There's nothing rash about saving frosting.
Oh, I'm so upset. But I do have lots of news about our boys in the service. It's so important to write to your mother. Poor Mrs. M.E. Norton of Spooner hasn't heard from her son, Marine Corps Private First Class Danny Norton, since February. Can you imagine? She's worried sick. Private Norton is in the Pacific seeing action in the Solomons and Guadalcanal. He's a brave man, having been awarded the Purple Heart after being wounded. His brother, PFC Harry Norton, is back safe and sound stateside, thank goodness. He's with the Army in Fort Knox, Kentucky, after serving in the North African and Sicilian campaigns. Mr. and Mrs. Sam Aho of Iron River tell me that their son, George, has been promoted to Private First Class. He's in Italy with the 15th Air Force Command. PFC Aho has been overseas for almost 2 years. And let's not forget our girls in the service. Army Nurse Corps Lieutenant Marion Juice as Superior is with the All-Wisconsin 44th Hospital Unit somewhere in the South Pacific. Lieutenant Juice has been overseas for 20 months. Lieutenant Mary Lucille Johnson, whose parents are Mr. and Mrs. John Ely of Superior, has been promoted to First Lieutenant. Lieutenant Johnson is stationed at the 34th General Hospital in England. And finally, wedding bells for Miss Dora Alvina Gunnerson, daughter of the Anton Gunnersons of Superior. She married Corporal William C. Fields of Anderson, South Carolina, February 10th. She is now Mrs. William C. Fields, Jack.
Or Mrs. W. C. Fields. Get away from me, kid. You bother me.
Oh, Jack, really?
It wouldn't be a show without a Jack, really, would it? Let's play one last number and then hope the best from Lewis and the frosting fight. Here's Harry James and Kitty Callan, an appropriate VE Day ditty, and it's been a long, long time, and it has, on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Thank you. kiss me once, then kiss me twice, then kiss me once again. It's been a long
James and his orchestra with Pretty Kitty Callan. And it's been a long, long time on station KUWS. Lou, what happened to you?
Never mind. I have these flashes in, and we'll have one more shortwave radio report from Stan Turner in France. From London, Dresden and Czech stronghold Olmütz fell to the Red Army troops in fighting today as diehard Nazi troops continue in the war in isolated pockets. Even so, a ceasefire agreement has been reached in Prague between Czech and German commanders. Now, we go to France.
This is Reims, France. Stan Turner, your correspondent. This report is delayed one day by Allied censors. Through an iron-faced Prussian general speaking after he had finished signing the unconditional surrender of the Nazis, Germany pleaded for mercy for its people yesterday. On the wall behind his back was a huge chart tabulating Allied casualties. He was Colonel General Alfred Jodl, chief of staff of the German Army and successor to Adolf Hitler. He was standing in a small room of a red schoolhouse in Reims, where General Dwight D. Eisenhower had his advance headquarters. On a big wooden table in front of him lay four identical documents to which he had just affixed his signature, one each for the United States, Britain, France, and Russia. Each bore the words first written by President Roosevelt and Prime Minister Churchill at Casablanca in 1943. Unconditional surrender. 17 correspondents, including Associated Press reporter Edward Kennedy, were present and heard Jodl's plea. Jodl held himself stiffly erect, conforming to the traditions of Prussian military correctness. His voice was low and soft. He said, quoting now, "With this signature, the German people and armed forces are, for better or worse, delivered into the victor's hands. In this war, which has lasted more than 5 years, both have achieved and suffered more, perhaps, than any other people in the world. In this hour, I can only express the hope that the victor will treat generously with them," unquote. Jodl's face was expressionless, and so were the faces of the American and British, French, and Russian generals who represented the Allies. All had seen German murder camps, and all knew the furious cruelty of German occupying forces. Jodl finished and sat down. A moment passed in dead silence, and then the German representatives were taken down the hall to meet General Eisenhower. Eisenhower and his deputy, Air Chief Marshal Sir Arthur Tedder, were waiting. They stood behind Eisenhower's small desk, and again, there was a moment of heavy silence. Eisenhower spoke. He was brief and terse as always. His voice was cold and stern. His steel blue eyes were stern. He made it plain that Germany was a defeated nation, and henceforth orders to the German people would come from the Allies. He said they would be obeyed. The Germans filed out. It was over. Nazi Germany ceased to exist. In Reims, France, this is Stan Turner.
I thought that would be a fitting end to our hour-long VE Day show.
But, Louis, what in heaven's name happened to you?
Where's your shirt?
I must say, that tank top shirt is very becoming.
And where's the colonel?
Colonel's right here.
Goodness me.
Whoa. Been through a little hurricane named Louis, colonel?
The colonel has something to say.
Well, I'm sorry, Miss Farrig, about the frosting thing and the... Oh, the chocolate chips. I put those chocolate chips back in the ice cream.
The ones he hadn't already eaten, that is.
The very idea.
Hey, I said I was sorry. I guess I got carried away. You know, the colonel has a sweet tooth, too. And, well, back in WW1, back in the Argonne...
Hey, no more war stories.
Right. I put the frosting back.
That is, the frosting he hadn't already eaten.
Well, it was tasty. And anyhow, I swirled the frosting so it kind of looks all decorative on the cake. And so here, I'm sorry.
Apology accepted, Colonel. This is a very pretty cake.
I kind of got to like that swirling part, and I made a couple of flower-type things to kind of top it off, and a nice little apex there, don't you think?
Very pretty and sweet, Colonel.
Put a cork in it, McCorkle.
That's a wrap tonight, folks. We'll be back same time, same place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing. For Lou Martin, Harriet Farrig, and the Colonel, this is Jack McKenna reminding you that war bonds still mean freedom.
But, Louis, where's your shirt?
Frosting fights are rather messy.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1945, an original weekly production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Harriet Farrig is played by Jennifer Simonson. Other performances by Tom Martinson, John Munson, John Munsell, Ray Paulson, Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1945 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week for more Radio Superior. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.